Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. That's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Generally, she is with us once a month. We missed her last month. She wasn't here in January. We were inaugurating a new president that day.
I don't know about your priorities.
I know.
Gardening.
We got to get it straight. Anyway, we're very pleased to have her back here to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. You know the drill if you've listened to the program before. Maybe you have some problem you're not quite sure what to do with. Maybe, as I'm sure a lot of people are, you are already thinking about what you would like to do in your garden for the coming growing season. Maybe you have a houseplant kind of thing. We can do that as well. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. So the number, as always, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. So if it would be long-distance call, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. And we'll take as many questions as we can. Well, I'm glad to have you back.
Hey, it's great to be here. Actually, feels like spring today.
Yes, it does. And it's going to be warm today, and then I guess we might have some severe weather. And then by the weekend, it'll be more what you would expect. Still, when it gets like this, we've had a couple of really nice days, I'm sure people just start feeling jazzed. You know, the snow has gone, and we can see the ground, and it has that sort of nice earthy smell, you know, and you get in the springtime and you start thinking, yes, one of these days there'll be snowdrops, there'll be tulips, there'll be, and then before you know it, whammo, it's going to be summer.
That didn't have a very happy ending.
Well, you know how I feel about summer. I'm good with it for about a month and a half, and then I get tired of it. But, you know,
but
no,
you're right.
I'm eager to say, I love my plants. I tell them how pretty they are. I talk to them. I can't wait.
Maybe this is more information than what we need.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We can edit that out later for the archive. We can edit that out. So are there some things, just before we get going,
sure,
are there some particular things you might like to talk about event-wise maybe? Or
absolutely. This is the time of year where lots and lots of garden day kinds of things go on. And a lot of them have to do with local master gardener programs. And so in your area, you might just check with your local extension office, but there are a bunch of them. Usually in March, we start seeing quite a few of them. Bloomington is going to have theirs March 7th, the Home Lawn and Garden Day. So lots of good opportunities. Chicago Flower Show is going to be March 7th through the 15th. Vermilion County is going to have their Garden Day workshop March 14th. So there's lots of opportunities if you're really getting the itch to do something or at least find out about gardening. This is the time. So usually in the month of March is a great time to be doing that.
Okay. And we do. I tell you what, we have a caller. Why don't we talk with him?
Okay.
And then maybe there's.
Sure.
I'm sure there's some
there's
other
lots
things,
of things
that
we can
say,
talk about.
You know, what kind of things people can be thinking about, and at what point can you actually start to get out there and start doing stuff? We have a caller though here to talk with on line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Last year, my daughter, knowing that I'm something of a chili head, gave me a plant, a started plant, which I later identified as being a Caribbean red.
Mm.
And I also discovered that chili plants are normally perennials, which are not frost tolerant. So in the fall, I dug it up and potted it and put it down in the basement. And it's still alive, but it seems to be getting kind of scraggly. I'm just wondering if it really has any future.
Of course it does. Well, there's still one tiny little green leaf. That's always my feeling, as long as it's hanging in there. And you're absolutely right. You know, there's lots of plants, you know, even tomatoes, and a lot of those would be perennials if it didn't get so darn cold here. So you're fine. I suspect it does look kind of straggly. Do you have it with any light at all, like fluorescent light or any kind of supplemental lighting at all in the basement? Or
yes, there is a shop-type fluorescent fixture.
Oh, good.
One regular bulb and one Grolux-type bulb over it.
Great. So how close is it, the bulbs, to the plant?
Well, kind of tall, so it ranges from about a few inches to maybe 2 feet.
Okay, so that's great. So because you want them fairly close to the light source, so helping out, that will help out a lot. I'm sure it does look a little scraggly. I would just sort of hang on, maybe another couple months, just get it Hang on. I don't know, probably as far as leaving the lights on, I don't know how long you're leaving them on, but about 16 hours or so is plenty. I'd put them on a timer. You may be getting to the point now where if there's even some supplemental lighting, I don't know if you have your windows down there, you might even think about maybe starting to fertilize it, maybe just a little bit. I don't know if you're doing that at all, but just try to get it going a little bit. But you just need it to hang on for another couple months till we get into the point where we're past frost.
That's so a 12-hour timer right now.
Yeah, so that's fine. I would do that. I would certainly check for spider mites. That's the other big thing that unfortunately peppers can get in a house situation like that. So, and I don't know if you know what spider mites are, but they cause little cobweb kind of looking things on the plants, but check on the undersides of the leaves. But that is a big problem sometimes indoors like that. And you can use something like an insecticidal soap to take care of spider mites. But there's probably a whole bunch of people out there, myself included, that have sort of winter over these plants and they've been in there long enough that they're kind of looking not all that great. But just to realize, just more than likely, if you can get them through these next couple months, they will flourish once you can get them outside.
A couple more questions about it. Will the bare stems grow new shoots when I put it back outdoors?
They should. They should on those guys. Once they get enough light, you should see some new sprouts. What you may end up doing is, what I would probably recommend is actually doing, once we get into some better light here, is actually to prune them back some and get them a little, and that will encourage some side budding. But so some of those shoots should go ahead and put out new growth.
Okay, and what about watering? Right now the soil is kind of moist. Should I let it dry out completely?
I would just keep it consistently moist, but don't overwater it. That's kind of the big thing, because they're not using a ton of water if they don't have a whole lot of leaves. So I would just keep it consistently moist. So you may not be watering it all that terribly often, you know, depending on what the temperature is.
Once a week.
Yeah, once a week's probably fine. I would let it just dry out maybe just a little bit. You don't want it to go super dry, but I certainly would not overwater it, because that's the other thing that can happen this time of year.
All right, it does get kind of cool down the basement, but never quite freezing. That probably doesn't help any.
Right, and yeah, because they're warm, you know, they love warm temperatures. So that would be the other thing that maybe it's suffering a little bit, because it might be a little cool down there.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Very good, thank you. And again, to another caller here. We have somebody on our line number 4. This is our toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Mm-hmm.
I have a serious complaint.
Uh-oh.
The principal reason I subscribe to WILL is for your and Celeste's programs. But your scheduling leaves something to be desired. We were cheated out of Sandy Mason one Tuesday when General Petraeus testified before Congress. That was unforeseen, and you couldn't have known that was going to happen. But to schedule her for the day of the inauguration is an intolerable insult to all the master gardeners across the state of Illinois. I suggest that you have her on twice a month for at least the next 2 spring months, so that we can catch up and hear our favorite gardener.
Oh, you're so nice. Thanks for calling, Dad. No, I'm kidding.
We were sorry that we ended up going a month without having her. She was not only were we dealing with the inauguration, but then she was also on vacation for a while in January, and it just
yes. Well, I don't mind her going on vacation.
Oh, okay.
So long as we don't miss her.
All right, we will try our best never again to go an entire month without Sandy.
But that's always nice to hear. Thanks for calling.
And hopefully twice a month, and I hope all the rest of our listeners will echo my sentiments.
All right. Well, we'll take that under advisement.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And generally speaking, when we're on our proper schedule, she's here once a month. It's always a Tuesday. And she is here to take your questions on things that grow in the home landscape. And the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And we'll talk with somebody else here in Champaign. This is line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I would like to get a little jump on planting seeds outdoors this spring, and I'm wondering about some of the cold weather crops like lettuce or carrots. How early can I get away with planting them? I have raised beds next to my driveway where I normally put them, And what sort of special protection might I have to provide?
Mm-hmm. And actually, it's kind of amazing on some of those on how well they'll deal with cold temperatures. So usually I say at least the 1st of March, middle of March, if you can wait that long. But I've even had, actually, spinach is one of those that you could actually plant now and it'll kind of just germinate when the time comes, you know, when it finally warms up enough. The big thing is that you don't want the seed to just sit there for a long period of time because then it succumbs to all kinds of, you know, injuries or insects or whatever. So I would say at least wait till the 1st of March or so. And usually we're into temperatures, and even if it gets a little cold, if things seem to come up and we really get in, you know, freezing temperatures are not a big deal. If we start getting into the teens after they come up, then you might want to have, I don't know, and actually it's a good thing to have anyway, is this, I don't know if you're familiar with what's called floating row covers. I don't know if people know what that is. It's kind of a spun bond material. It kind of looks like, what do I want to say? It's not really a cheesecloth, but it's in the sense of just kind of like cheesecloth when you can kind of see through it. But it's this kind of spun bond polyester stuff. But it's wonderful stuff to have around because you can use it for just a quick frost protection. Just throw it over.
Just throw it over?
Right. And they'll take freezing temperatures as around 30s or so. That's fine. But if we really got into the teens, you know, the plants come up and we got into the teens, then I would probably definitely just throw that floating row cover over it. And it's just enough. And even with that, what you might see is, you know, if you don't do that, you might see where maybe the leaves might get a little brown or whatever. But most of the time on those cold weather stuff, it doesn't really kill them.
Okay. What would you consider cold weather crops beyond the spinach and lettuce?
I think any of your leafy things, any of the leafy things. You could even try, if you want to try from seed, you could even do something like, although we usually start those with transplants from indoors, even some things like broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and those kinds of things. So anything that I guess you can think of, they can throw in a salad.
Okay.
Other than tomatoes.
Okay, sure. And the only thing I'm thinking of now is it's so wet out there.
Right.
You might not plant even in a raised bed. It's pretty wet.
Yeah. The one thing is, though, you know, if you have halfway decent soil, you don't feel like you need to really do anything in the way of tilling, I would just broadcast it over the top surface of the soil and then just get like a cheap potting mix or maybe have used potting mix or something like that and then just cover it with potting mix.
Okay.
So you really don't have to work the soil, I guess is my point.
Okay, fantastic.
Right. So, I guess that's a good thing to bring up to people is not to work the soil when it's too wet. You're better off not working it at all if it's too wet rather than, you know, it'll just turn into clods. If you've ever done that, you'll never do it again.
Well, so, and that's a good point about the old potting mix.
Yeah.
Of course, we all have all the pots in our garage from last year that still have the soil in them.
Yeah, sure. And it's a great thing. You know, it's not frozen. It's not wet. Throw that over your top of your seeds and everybody will be happy.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, good.
Right, very good. Thank you for the call. Others are certainly welcome. Sandy Mason's here, and we are here looking for your questions on things that grow around the home. Could be houseplants, but also if you're, as I said at the beginning, you have a problem that you're still not quite sure what to do with, or you're starting to think about what you want to do in the next growing season, you have questions, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. When does the point come when it would be okay if you're thinking about planting trees that you could be doing that?
Actually, you know, now, as long as you can get into the ground, as long as it's not frozen, you could certainly get in, you know, do that, or if it's not too wet. I would certainly by the 1st of March is a good time to sort of be thinking about
that. And what about dormant. When could then is it okay to start if you're thinking about doing some pruning?
Now is a good time to be thinking. Yeah, we usually say, you know, once we get past the really cold stuff, I say that, of course, you know, not knowing what the heck's going to happen this year. But usually by the time, certainly by the end of February, so usually we've gotten through the really cold stuff, I hope, and to the point where you could do any kind of pruning other than anything that blooms early in the spring. So you don't want to prune anything like lilacs, forsythia, anything that basically blooms before mid-June. They're actually blooming on wood that was produced the year before. So they already have their buds right now. So if you do a lot of pruning now, you're cutting off the flower buds. You're not going to kill the plant. You're just removing those flower buds, the things we like to see. So you certainly could do some light pruning on crab apples and some of those and still not, you know, obviously lose all of the buds off of those. But just to realize anything in the spring blooming, those things you may want to wait later until after they bloom to do any pruning. But certainly a lot of it, this is a great time to do it because you can, you know, you can see the shape, you can kind of see what's happening, and it's just really an easy time to be out there doing stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well, because the plants don't have foliage on them, so all there is are the bones.
Right.
And
right.
This is now the time. And I always think later.
I wish I had,
you know, the time to do this would have been back at this point when they didn't have any leaves on there.
Right.
And somehow I never managed to find the time to get around to it.
And even things like just rejuvenating, you know, maybe you've got some, like a good example is like some red twig dogwood, you know, which tends to get really tall, you know, they easily get 15 feet or so. They kind of start to lose their red twigs and they don't look all that great. And last year, you know, I always try these things out. So last year I chopped the things down to the ground and I know my husband thought I was killing the things and, you know, he just, well, whatever. And they look beautiful. They just look beautiful. So maybe you have shrubs like red twig dogwood. I would also put privet in that same class, pink spireas maybe, you know, anything along those lines that tends to get kind of tall and lanky and not so pretty, I would really be thinking about chopping them down to the ground. They'll look so much better.
Really? Just not
it's kind of brutal when you first
broom it. No. You know, you just say, go ahead and cut the whole thing
you
down.
Just, and I know it's tough, and it was tough for me, even though I'd read it in the books. I knew this was supposed to work, but I wasn't real sure. And they just look so much better. So this would be the time to really be thinking about those things. Now, obviously, they're not going to get as tall that first year, those kind of things, but they just look so much better. So it may be another thing to sort of think about with some, especially if you have some things you really, really are not all that happy with and they've gotten too big and you're just not happy with them anymore.
Yeah. Can you move perennials now or would it be too soon for that?
Probably a little early for moving perennials. I'd probably be thinking more like April 1st or so to really wait for those because you really want them to get, you want to move them around when you know that they're going to be able to take off right, you know, very quickly after that damage of the root pruning and all that stuff that you do when you transplant stuff. So I'd probably wait till around the 1st of April or so.
Okay. I think we have someone else here ready to go in Pontiac on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a red bud, and it is just loaded with little seed pods right now, waiting to drop off and try to grow in my yard. Most of the area around that is ground cover, so I can't just mow those down. So I spend all summer pulling tiny red buds. Is there anything I can do before those drop? I mean, I can't really reach them to pull them off, but...
Well, I wish I could tell you that there was something wonderful that you could do. Unfortunately, there really isn't that I know of other than, you know, trying to remove as many as you can now, you know, before they drop.
Yeah.
Or find somebody who really wants a lot of red buds. But they're really, you know, we get into that with even, you know, maples are another one that those are notorious for reseeding themselves. And, you know, and if they would all fall at one time, you know, obviously you could, you know, somehow collect them with a sheet or something underneath, but you can't even really do that because they don't fall all at the same time. So I wish I had a better story for you on that one.
No way to tell it to stop, huh? Okay. Okay, well, thank
you. No, sorry.
We are all anxious to get out in our gardens, especially when we get a few days like this.
I know.
There's not much you can do, but...
Well, maybe it's a good afternoon to pick redbud seeds off the tree.
Okay,
I don't know.
Thanks.
Sorry.
All right, thank you. So if you actually wanted to have some more red buds, you could take those pods and stick them on the ground?
They're amazingly easy to germinate. They just kind of do their own thing. Yeah. And I've actually several of the red buds I have in my yard are volunteers. They just came up and just so it is a great way to get and red buds are not, you know, nice small tree and really nice to have and those kind of things. But obviously there's some issues and some of them set seed very strongly some years as opposed to others. So sometimes you have this bumper crop of seeds, unfortunately.
Yeah. Nice thing about red buds is they grow very fast.
Yeah.
But they don't have a very long life.
Yeah. They're not in that long-term kind of thing. Even, you know, they're a native tree, but they're just one of those that succumbs to a few different disease problems. But I still think it's a great tree. As you said, it grows quickly and, you know, you can't hardly beat the flowers in the springtime. So it has a lot of good things going for it, even though it isn't... If you get 40 years out of a redbud, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Well, that sounds
that's good.
You know, that's not bad.
I mean, that's
really,
yeah. In the scheme of things, that's probably not too bad.
You know, because I certainly in our yard, I know that there's one that now must be, maybe between 15 and 20 feet that started as a volunteer. And the first time that I really think I really took note of it, maybe it was 3 feet tall.
Yeah. Right.
And that was, I guess, about 15 years ago, or I don't know how long. So it's really amazing how that just, and it was there and it was doing its thing. And I said, well, okay, fine. I let it alone. And then before you know it, it was 15 feet tall.
So that's a great way to get a cheap tree.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, other questions here. You want to talk with Sandy, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month. We talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions, call us 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Are there some other things that at this time of the year you would say to people, here's some things to be thinking about and maybe some things you could actually be doing?
Well, I think this is a good time to just, because I know a lot of us are anxious to get outside. It's just a good time to sort of walk around your landscape to see what's going on. You might notice those bagworms that you didn't notice last year. That's a big thing. And this would be the time of year, you know, that when we do have bagworms, that the only thing you can do is to pull them off. And I've been doing that on my own trees. And it was one of those things, and I may have told this story before, but I always think of bagworms on spruce trees. And I have a few spruce trees. And I never thought about them too much on pine trees. And so I didn't really look at my white pine all that much. And sure enough, that's where the bagworms ended up being, was on my white pine tree. So just because we think about maybe arborvitaes or spruce having bagworms, realize that there are a lot of the evergreens can also get them. So this would be the time of year to be picking the bags off. And I know it's kind of a pain, but if you can do that now and you want to make sure you get them picked off, hopefully before June, because that's when they're going to hatch out, because a lot of those will actually have eggs in them already. And so those will be ones that will hatch out in June. So you can take care of a lot of your, maybe some of your insect problems just by kind of looking around and looking at some of the plants that you have right now. So that would be one thing. Also, scale, which is one of those insects that a lot of times people don't really notice because, you know, there's no discernible head or tail or legs or anything that tells us it's an animal, it's an insect. Mm-hmm. So we often don't look at them. So I would be looking at things like lilacs and like the red twig dogwood, and a lot of the shrubs will have these little things that look like either little oyster shells or little helmets or something that's on the twig itself. And this would be the time to sort of be thinking about those things, because some of those can be taken care of through dormant sprays, dormant horticultural sprays. And so that would be something that just go out and look at plants right now, and you'll find that you can take care of a lot of problems now rather than in the thick of things when you're so busy with so many other things.
Yeah. Well, if you see that and it's a part of the plant that it's, you know, you feel okay with cutting off, can you just just trim it off?
Absolutely. Just trim it off. Scale is it's a great way, because usually it's really condensed on a few different branches, and then a few will just have a few scale on them. And so absolutely. So as you're rejuvenating, maybe it's a good time to rejuvenate, is actually to cut a lot off. And then get rid of a lot of those insects that way. And of course, you need to make sure you get those out of there, you know, chip them or do something with them and not just, you know, throw them off to the side.
Yeah. All right. Some other callers here. I think Champaign is next. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One, I have a tree that may have some black fungus on it. And I was told one time that judicial trimming may help it. My second question is there a rule of thumb about how far plantings should be from the house, or how close you should allow them to get to the house?
Okay. And what kind of shrub was it that had the black fungus or the?
It's a tulip poplar tree, actually.
Oh, it's a tree. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the one, probably what you're seeing with the tulip poplar, I'm not sure. Is it just very dark individual spots, or is it almost looks like it's a mold growing across the leaf? Or do you remember?
On the bark. I'm not sure what it is. I was just told that's what it was, but it was on the bark.
On the trunk itself then?
Mm-hmm.
Or usually we don't worry too much about any kind of, you know, whether it's mold, algae, or whatever growing on the trunks, because usually that's just something that's there and it's not hurting the tree. The reason I was asking about where it was, because often what we can do on tulip poplar is they actually get a couple different, one is a disease, we actually call it tar spot, and that's exactly what it looks like. It's just a black spot on the leaf. But they also sometimes can get aphids. And I'm wondering if that's not really what you have, because aphids actually produce a stuff called honeydew, and it's this sticky stuff, and we often see them on tulip poplars. And then because of the warm temperatures and humidity and stuff, that actually will get a black mold, a black fungus growing on the honeydew, that sweet stuff. And so we get this kind of a black mold simply because we've got some aphid issues and those kind of things. So I really wonder, I'm not sure I'd worry too much about the black mold part, but you may be seeing some aphid issues, which usually aren't a big issue on trees. There's usually enough, you know, the plant does fine, and there's enough ladybugs or whatever that are eating the aphids. So we usually don't worry about it in a big way.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. You might want to check on that a little bit more to find out what's going on, but I have a feeling that's probably what it is. And then your other question about how close to put things to the house?
Mm-hmm. Like bushes, mostly bushes, some trees.
Well, you want to make sure there's good air circulation, and it also depends on what kind of overhang you have on your home. You know, if you have a really wide overhang, then it's going to be a very dry area, and some plants aren't going to do very well with that. I would say, you know, if you can, you'd be better off at 6 feet, believe it or not. I know that's a wide area. I would say 4 feet, no closer than 4 feet. 6 feet would be better. So you have a nice wide area. And again, because of overhang, it's going to vary with the overhang. And then plus, if you have to do any maintenance, those kinds of things. If you can do that, that would be great.
For bushes, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Really to pull them back farther than what we usually do. I know that sounds like a little wide, but certainly no more than 4 feet. So think about the maximum size of the shrub and then try to allow at least 4 feet if you can, you know, between that. Trees are another story. Even with a small tree, I wouldn't put it any closer than 15 feet to a home.
Then how much?
15.
15.
With a small tree. So we really cram things, I know, especially if you have sod or something like that, and you don't really want to cut up your sod. But if you could pull things away from the home, it really does. It's better for the shrubs, and it's actually better for your home to get some air circulation through there.
Hey, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I think particularly when it comes to trees, one of the things that people need to remember is that the roots of the tree extend as far underground as the canopy does over the top, and if you
and then some,
and then, well, and then some. And certainly there have maybe people have experienced this or have known this, that you know, tree roots can actually do a lot of damage to home foundations if they're planted too close to the house.
Right, and especially if they have, and it's usually a matter of they take advantage. Usually, what happens is there might be a crack in the foundation, and then you get that pressure from the roots. It's just enough to do more damage. So usually, you know, what happens is it sort of takes advantage of those kind of bad areas or weak areas within a foundation. So absolutely. And it really is better for the plants to sort of get them away from the house. You get better air circulation. It's just so much better for maintenance, those kind of things. And I know it seems a little odd, but if you think about it, especially if you're looking at a landscape from the street, you don't notice that it's, you know, 6 feet away or 4 feet or whatever. You really don't notice that kind of space. So it's not so much that it's going to be noticeable to just by looking at your landscape.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it also, when a tree's young, maybe you're not thinking about how big eventually it's going to get to be.
Yeah. And that's why I think if people pull them away, they'll find that once that plant gets bigger than what they thought is, at least it's not smack dab next to the house now.
So. Yeah. Okay. So. Next, we will talk with someone on our toll-free line, our line number two, and that's Germantown Hills right here. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
I always enjoy your shows, and particularly this one. I have a question about soil preparation before we put in some gooseberry and currant plants. We have, we're in western Woodford County, a mostly wooded lot, and gooseberry bushes grow like crazy in the woods, all wild. But when we've planted domestic gooseberries and currants in the past, they would grow well for a couple of years, and then they just faded away, and we've recently opened up some area that was heavily wooded, and now we've got a little more sunshine. We're wondering about putting gooseberries and currants in again, and can we help the plants thrive a little better by amending the soil beforehand? I should mention we had it tested not long ago and have quite alkaline soil.
And that might be part of it. Although, as you say, they grow everywhere, especially gooseberries. They grow everywhere.
Oh,
so
they love it.
So that's not an issue. I would think about, maybe adding something like sulfur or something within the soil. I think sort of bring down the pH. I think that will help some. If you have probably somewhat high clay content soil, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
so you might want to add some compost. So you're not quite sure why they kind of faded away in the past.
Right.
So
we had them planted in a terrace, or a couple of terraces, in a couple of locations in the yard, and we wondered if just possibly by being in a raised terrace, if the roots froze out when it got really cold. But the wild gooseberries certainly didn't freeze out. if they had slightly bigger berries, it'd be okay.
I know. Doesn't it make you wonder you should be growing the other?
Yeah.
Grow the other.
We'd like to hybridize them, maybe get the wild berry vigor with a decent size.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think that I'm not sure about that. If it's a terraced area, if you had it in a container, then I'd say absolutely the roots could have frozen and not done well. But it sounds like a terraced area. I assume it's several feet. And
yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Well,
so
anyway,
we're
putting them now. That's not an issue. We got a new location.
Right. So I would wonder, and probably especially I'm thinking more along the lines of the currants even, is that they do tie like a semi-well-drained soil. So do you think it got too wet? That was my other thing.
No, these are pretty well-drained, if to the extent that clay will
drain. Yeah, I think that would be the thing I would think of. So I would certainly try it again. Certainly rabbits really like them, but you would have noticed the damage from rabbits.
This wasn't rabbits. This was just the plant.
They just died.
Dying, the leaves dying off and then drying up.
Yeah. So I have seen crown rot, certainly on currants before, where they get this little, that kind of issue, certainly with currants. I haven't seen that so much with gooseberries. So it sounds like you've got some sun, which certainly they'll appreciate. I would, go ahead and add some compost, maybe some sulfur, or bring down the pH a little bit, and then kind of go from there. But I have a feeling that it sounds like those are not all that terribly difficult normally to grow. So it sounds like maybe it was just a combination of things maybe last time.
Okay.
So, good luck.
Try it again. Hope for the best. We love both gooseberry cobbler is one of the best things in the world.
Isn't it? I love gooseberries.
Yeah. If we succeed, I'll have to call you up and invite you over.
There you go.
All right. Okay,
thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Other questions are welcome, and we certainly have about 20 minutes at least here with Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We were talking earlier about the fact that this maybe is just a good time if you haven't been outside and just walked around the yard and just kind of taken a look at things and see how things look. Maybe think about what you would want to do, or maybe there's some spot that you've been thinking, here in this area, we really need to do something with this. Now would be a great time to start thinking about, looking at plants you might like to plant, or just thinking about in particular areas what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is actually, we don't always think about, we always think about taking, maybe if we do take pictures, we take pictures, when the landscape looks really good or, everything. But this is really a good time to take pictures because you don't get, you kind of get rid of that, I guess I'll say clutter, or that sort of distraction of pretty flowers or whatever. And if you can take a picture of your landscape now in several different directions and kind of different, and even maybe take them in black and white, you'll find that, or print them off in black and white, in that you'll find those areas, boy, there's just something wrong here, I'm not quite sure. And then you actually can use those pictures to maybe try out some, I'm going to put a shrub here and a shrub here. And so it's kind of a great way to sort of starting to think a little bit more about landscape design or what's not quite working. And it's kind of, and this is the time of year where maybe you have a little bit more time to do those kinds of things. So take some pictures now, because if your landscape looks good right now, then you've done something right, because, things are really drab and, so if it holds up now, then you've really got good structure in your garden, and then you can add those frills and stuff later on of flowers and all those other things. But it really, you have to have a basic good design.
Mm-hmm. So. Another call here, Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm Australian in background, and I'm getting quite a number of calls about fires. I thought it might be educational for your audience to receive some of your knowledge about fires. We know that people can burn prairie up to within 4 inches of a house if they know what they're doing and if they do it regularly. But a lot of land-based ecosystems are dependent on fire, and the Australians have lost up to 200 people in fires. And part of the reason is that there's a natural buildup of litter. And then it eventually catches fire, whether it's by lightning or by some accidental fire. And people are more and more wanting to plant little prairie plots in there. And you've got a natural gardener program now and things like that. And it is in my mind that if they do put in a quarter of an acre of prairie, they have to understand their ecology enough to know that the prairie will benefit from that burning, but it has to be done, 3-5 years, depending on how old the prairie is. And you're talking about building things, putting plants in, and not too close to the house. Well, rest assured, thermals will take unburned litter up in the air and drop down on the house. At least it happened in downtown Champaign, where a recent fire caused litter to go over the Orpheum Theatre and catch other buildings that way. I thought you might be able to add to what I just said to alert people to the fact that they have to make sure that their burning is ecologically sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we think about prairies and we think about fires going along with prairies, but obviously that isn't always going to work, and depending on where people have their plants or their plantings or whatever.
You can't really burn in downtown, so you have to get out there with scissors or something like that. Give it a haircut.
Yeah. So mowing might actually be, I know it's not the best thing in the world when it comes to prairies, but sometimes in some areas that would end up being the best thing, or the only thing that could be done is actually mowing.
Mow and rake. Take away the litter.
Right. So that might be an issue too. So, but that's certainly another good reason why people should, you know, keep plants away from their homes, is just for, you know, all kinds of reasons. But certainly fire is certainly one of those things too. It's just access and those kind of things. So yeah, it's fire is one of the things that's definitely love hate relationship. Love is it's an important part of a prairie ecosystem. But obviously, you know, fire out of control is not a good thing. So
yes. Okay.
So thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. And again, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. When people try to incorporate prairie plants into their home landscape, are these plants that have been adapted really for our home landscape, or are they essentially the same kind of plants, and do you have to think differently about how you maintain them than other kinds of perennials?
It's not so much that now you have to, if you add a few prairie plants, now you have to burn your whole landscape. You really don't, we don't have to, because obviously we're not recreating a prairie when we're actually adding these plants to our landscape. But the thing that I have noticed is, you know, the prairies are truly, you know, ecosystems, you know, they're plants, you know, living together. And when I've noticed, when I've actually taken prairie plants and put them into my landscape, they get so much bigger than what they do normally in a prairie, and because they're not having those competition, they don't have those interrelationships they have with other prairie plants, so they act differently. They certainly are different kinds of plants. But I think that's what one of the things that we're certainly seeing within horticulture is actually we're sort of evaluating those plants on how well they are already adapted for landscapes and how well they work well for landscapes. And I think a good example is purple coneflower. I mean, that's gotten to a point where people don't even think about it being a prairie plant so much. Or at least a native plant, because it has been hybridized so much and stuff. But it's a great plant. It works very well in landscape situations. Little bluestem is another one that works great in landscape situations, native plant. And actually, we're doing a program. Jamie Ellis with the Illinois Natural History Survey is actually doing a program on landscaping with native plants on February 17th. If people want to join us at the extension office at 7 o'clock in the evening, they can learn more about landscaping with native plants and how those plants get translated into a landscape situation. So there there are so many native plants. They're just gorgeous in a landscape situation. And you don't necessarily have to suddenly change how you do everything simply because now you have native plants. But I think it's sort of appreciating what we have in our own backyard is kind of what it is.
Do those things that are there some of those things that do periodically benefit, if not every year, maybe every couple of years, is just to cut them down to the ground? Is that something that you need to do with a lot of this?
That would be, especially with the grasses. This is something, but we do that with ornamental grasses anyway. And actually, some of my grasses, just because I'm out in the country and I'm able to do that on where the plants are, is actually I do go ahead and burn them. Just burn those individual plants within a landscape situation. But generally, you're going to have to cut the plants down anyway because they're perennials and, you know, they've got the old heads and all that kind of stuff needs to be taken down anyway. So again, you're not really changing how. It's really just looking at plants a little bit differently and seeing just how gorgeous they are. Baptisia is another really good example. Indigo is a great landscape plant, a native plant, but it's just beautiful in a landscape. You couldn't ask for anything better when it comes to the, you know, either blue or white flowers and just really great plants. So maybe it's sort of looking at those plants again. We always seem to think that within horticulture for a very, very long time, we always thought it had to be from some faraway place to be a really good plant, you know, not realizing kind of the Wizard of Oz thing in your own backyard, that a lot of those plants are really great plants and do very well in landscape.
Okay. On to somebody else, another champagne person here, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have got several pink spirea plants and a couple of weigelas that were looking pretty spindly towards the end of last year. Can you cut those back at this time? I know they're flowering plants or flowering bushes, or should I just let them go again till after they flower?
Yeah, probably the one thing you notice with the certainly the pink spirea, I would chop it down to the ground. Go for
okay.
it.
Right now?
You could do it now or, you know, later on right before it, as it's starting to sprout up a little bit, you can go ahead and cut them. Because those actually bloom on new wood. The weigela, if you cut it back now, what you'll know, you won't see the flowers because it actually does bloom on old wood.
Okay.
So that one I'd probably wait until after it flowers and then cut it back.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
All right. There you go. And again, we have about 7-8 minutes left. You have questions for Sandy Mason, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Some other things that you would say people at this point should be thinking about or could be thinking about?
Well, probably, you know, we talked about what things you could start, but just to realize, you know, even though we do get into this warm weather, not to be, you know, the idea that we can just sort of plant everything. So really thinking about and doing a little bit of research if you do have certain plants that you want to plant outside. You know, usually we're talking about perennials and stuff. We're talking about April. If we're talking about some of our summer annuals, we're probably not really talking about until May. Usually we say at least after Mother's Day for things like impatiens and even some of the herbs like basil and some of those that are not hardy. So even if we get into a warm spell, realize that you always have that issue that, you know, it can get cold again until you start getting into May, which seems like a long way off. But I hope soon we'll find that. So that would be one thing. And even just sort of looking over your lawn area, that would be the thing, too, on what kind of bare areas might be in the lawn. We're a little early yet. We'd probably, be looking at April to start any, you know, if you really want to reseed your lawn, I'd think about it in April. But you could evaluate it now. Maybe this is the time you need to, you've got some low spots. This would be the time to fill in those low spots, you know, maybe where the lawnmower is constantly scalping a certain area because it's a lower in one spot. So you certainly could go ahead and do that or even top dress with compost or something like that to sort of work out some of those lawn issues now. And also just weed issues. Really think about those areas. Maybe we had a lot of weeds and realize whenever you have a bare spot, you're going to get weeds. It's just you can guarantee that. So maybe this is the time, the year that you're really going to work on the lawn and maybe reseed it in April and kind of thicken up the lawn so you don't have quite the weed problems that you've had in the past. So crabgrass control, we're looking a little bit, again, pretty early for that. And just to realize that usually we're talking about April to be doing any crabgrass control, too. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little time yet to be thinking about those things. And don't apply it too early because it doesn't really help you too much.
So for both weed control and fertilization, we're still a good 2 months out, probably.
Yeah, we're pretty early. You know, crabgrass control we usually think about in April. We're a little bit different. The University of Illinois generally doesn't recommend doing any major fertilization until around the 1st of May, so which I know is late. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think about it in April, but really have found that that it's much better to wait for that May application, and then just realizing doing a late fall application is much better than doing a really early spring application. So something a little bit different. So a few things to think about, but it's certainly a good time to be starting to make some plans on maybe fixing those problems. Maybe mm-hmm. this would be a good year to fix problems.
Okay. We have an off-the-air call here from someone who is apparently has a small terrace. He says is 7 by 13, and I guess he's thinking, would it be better? He would like to get some grass in this area, and would it make more sense to try to do seed or to actually put sod down?
You know, people have to, there's advantages and disadvantages both of seed or sod. And I assume this is full sun. I don't know if we know that or not. Do we know that?
Sounds like it's maybe a mix.
Yeah. The problem with sod is that generally you get what you get. You can't ask for like full shade or, you know, shady sod or whatever, because generally that's the type of grass that's in the sod is meant for full sun. So that's one of the disadvantages of sod, is the fact that you can't make those distinctions about environmental kind of conditions. Whereas with seed, you could actually pick a mix, pick a blend that's good for shadier spots that might have creeping fescue in it, as well as Kentucky bluegrass. Whereas usually with sod, you're looking at Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass mix, full sun kind of mix. So that's kind of have to weigh the two out. Obviously, sod's an instant lawn, but really for the most part, you know, sounds like in this area might be better off just doing a seed and getting a good grass that you know is going to do well in that kind of environmental condition. Yeah. So it takes a little bit longer because you certainly have to keep it moist, those kind of things. But in the long run, you know, you're developing grass in an area where it's going to grow. It's the same soil, all those kinds of things. Whereas sod, you know, it's a little different. You're taking a grass that was grown somewhere else under different environmental conditions, and now you're hoping it's going to grow in your spot. So kind of advantages, disadvantages, and people have kind of weigh that out.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's not an enormous area. So if you could reasonably think about seeding something like that, and
absolutely
trying to make sure you've got to water it so that it will germinate,
right.
You know, no telling what sort of what the soil is like, but it sounds like that would be not an impossible thing to seed a relatively small
right.
area,
right? And if it's an area that, the other thing that I would be thinking about now is if it's a weedy area, if you have a lot of perennial weeds, mm-hmm. you may decide you want to deal with those first before you actually do any seeding. So that would be something to sort of evaluate it now. You know, are there a lot of dandelions there? Is there creeping charlie there? Those kind of perennial weeds, they're much easier to deal with now than after you've already seeded it. So.
Okay. Savoy, we have a caller here, line one. Hello.
Yes, my problem is I had the best dog in the world, and this granule fertilizer, I don't know, most of it seems to be poisonous to pets. So I was wondering what one would be the best one to put in.
You're talking about for your lawn area, or?
Yes, it's a lawn area.
Okay. In those kind of conditions, I think, especially if the dog is on the lawn quite a bit, you might even think about some of the liquid-type fertilizers, something that's actually going to work into the soil and work into the plant fairly quickly, rather than a granular or something that's going to be around there longer. So you might think about the liquid-type fertilizers instead, than the granular.
I can do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then that you would literally spray it on, water it on, and then once it had actually soaked in, then it would be okay to be on the grass?
Right. Once it dries, then it's fine. So it would be one of those things that I would, you know, keep the animal off while it's still wet, and then that might be a good route to go. Generally, you're going to have to, liquid fertilizer doesn't last quite as long, so generally you have to do it more often, but it's certainly mm-hmm. another option.
Okay. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Got a couple minutes here left with Sandy. If somebody wants to call real quick, I'm sure that we can get him in. Are we past the point now where, or are we around the point where if people wanted to do indoor forcing of bulbs that were for that had their cold period, that, you know, you can go places and you can buy bulbs that are ready to go. are we there at that point where if you wanted to have a little flower inside the house?
Sure, absolutely. And we're getting to that point now where you can buy them where they're already ready to go and, you know, those kind of things. And it's a great way to sort of for spring, I guess, inside our homes. But generally, we're pretty late to be trying to do it yourself because usually you need anywhere from 13 to 14 weeks of cold period before you can go ahead and get those to flower. But you should be able to start seeing those usually, certainly by March, we'll start to see those in the stores where they're already forced and ready to go. And those are ones that, you know, actually, you know, I've gotten, especially daffodils and some of those, that you can plant those in your yard afterwards. You don't have to, like, throw them away. They won't bloom again this year, but certainly they'll bloom the next year. And I've gotten a lot of, like, especially the small daffodils. I just love those little bitty daffodils. Mm-hmm. And then just plant them in your yard afterwards after they're finished. And, you know, then you'll have just every year you're adding more bulbs to your landscape as well. So they can be reused.
All right. We'll try to get one more at least. Flossmore, line 4. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This isn't outside, but it's... I have African violets, and I've had them for years and years. And I guess I'm very optimistic, but I feel like they should bloom most of the time. Now, am I wrong?
As in continually bloom?
Well, how often should they bloom?
Well, usually with those, they have an off period.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly normal, where they'll do this flowering thing, and they'll look great, and then they'll take a little break, and then they'll flower again, and then they'll take a little break, and they'll flower again. So you will see this kind of rhythm to them, and for most of them, that's exactly what they do.
And it seems like they bloom at the same time. I mean, all 6 of them bloom at the same time.
I believe that, especially, you know, a lot of these are hybrids, and, you know, I believe that. They kind of get into their own rhythm kind of thing. So they're not going to be blooming, you know, continually every single day.
But I feel like I've got bad plants when they just go on and they don't bloom. And that's kind of what I'm wondering.
But you feel pretty confident, you know, they're getting plenty of light because they like bright light, not direct light, but they like bright light.
Yes, that's the trouble, of course, in the summer.
Yeah, and right. And then also, you know, they don't like to dry out too much, certainly.
Right.
That's the other thing. And they don't like to be cold. So
if
they're next to a cool window, they don't necessarily like that all that much.
Okay.
So there is a certain rhythm, but you may be able to sort of look at those things a little bit, and certainly fertilizing them, those kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
You may find that you can speed them up a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you. Well, I guess we're about the point where we finish up for this time around. Any last thing you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, I hope people get an opportunity to get out and look at and do some of these garden days, those kind of things. People are welcome to come join us February 17th at 7 o'clock at the Champaign County Extension Office. Actually learn about invasive plants in a garden as well as landscaping with native plants. And people can just show up, and I think it'll be a good program.
Okay. Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here to talk about lawn and garden care. You also may look for her and other folks on the program that we have on WILL-TV Thursday night, 7 o'clock. It's called Illinois Gardener. It's a live show, and there is that opportunity to call in with questions on that program, too. Thanks.
Thank you.